For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I remember in fifth grade, we had a pet turtle, like in the class, like a classroom turtle. And I remember one time my teacher was like, Bart. And I remember being snapped back to reality and my hand was in the turtle tank. And I looked back and I was like, wait, everyone is in their seats. And I think that was my first like vivid memory of like, holy, I don't think I'm normal.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls around the world? I would like to welcome you back to the Real Talk with Zuby podcast. On today's episode, we have got on a man that I have been following for many years. He is a YouTuber, an entrepreneur. He's in the fitness space. He is the owner of the gym and the apparel company, Barbell Brigade. And this is the one and only Bart Kwan. Welcome to the show, man.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I've been following you for a long time, like as well. So it's cool to finally be able to connect in person, which is awesome.
Awesome, man. Yeah, you're one of those people. It's weird that this is our first time meeting because I feel like I already know you. We now live in this weird world where you can kind of know someone without ever actually having met in person.
So yeah, with like Instagram and like people's stories, you can know them pretty intimately.
Yeah.
Like my wife's always showing me things of like our friends. Did you see that they just bought a bag of marshmallows and they spilled it all over the floor? And I was like, oh, crazy.
So Bart, I've done a brief intro, but for people who aren't familiar with you, please tell my audience who you are.
Yeah, so I started on YouTube almost a decade and a half ago on JK News, JK Films, and it was originally a sketch comedy channel. And from there, we kind of went into JK News, which is more of the comedy talk show. And I started building a fitness brand because fitness has always been like a huge part of me. And so now we have the gym, apparel, supplements. So that's kind of what I've been doing, or pretty much making an earning online for the past, since 2007. Mm. So what is that? 16 years?
Yeah. It doesn't sound that long ago, but it is.
It is. Yeah.
So let's rewind a little bit. I want to know, tell me about young Bart. Tell me about where you grew up. What was your childhood like?
So I grew up pretty much born and raised in California. I grew up in the first city that I could remember. It's called Gardena. Mm. It's like in the South Bay area. And I vaguely remember my next door neighbor sharing a skateboard with me. And I think that's when I first learned how to skateboard, when I was like 3 or 4. Did not continue with that. But that was like my first. I remember having a Hawaiian Punch skateboard. And that's like always like fond memories. And then I moved to the city called Cerritos. And I probably attribute a lot of my mindset and thought process of the world to that upbringing. So Cerritos, it's a small town, but it's in the cross section of Orange County, LA, and Long Beach. It's like perfectly right there. And if you're from California or SoCal, you know that all those crowds and vibes and cultures are actually very different. Mm. But because I was at Cerritos, I got to see like a huge diverse, like mishmash of all kinds of stuff. Like I've seen Asian dudes in Mexican gangs. I've seen like white guys in Asian gangs. I've seen black skaters, which traditionally that's not the case. It's usually all white skaters. So I've just seen like, oh, anything is possible. At the school Indian club, there'd be Filipinos because their best friend is Indian. So I just saw like this world that almost felt like some sort of cultural utopia.
Okay.
And so that was my framework. Mm. Like anything is possible. Anybody could do whatever they want. And that I grew up there. Unfortunately, I got into a lot of trouble in my early years. So I ended up getting expelled from Cerritos High School. And I went to two other high schools. I went to Army and Navy Academy, which is in San Diego. I kicked out from there.
Can I ask what you were doing?
Yes.
Okay.
So at that one, it's very specific. I me and a couple of my friends were running like an ecstasy ring.
Oh, wow.
Like selling drugs there.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So one night, and obviously it's a boarding school, so there's cameras all over the place. And one night, the school caught me and like 10 other dudes like sneaking from room to room. And then they're like, what the hell's going on? And we made the big mistake of being on drugs while selling drugs. So we're making stupid decisions, going off campus. Then the school commandant, which is like the military version of a principal, saw us at the local 7-Eleven. And you're never supposed to leave school because you live there. It's a boarding school. At the local 7-Eleven, he like pretty much ID'd all of us. When he came back, wrote up the papers. Got kicked out. By that time, that was already like the last draw with my family. Because like usually your parents don't send you to boarding school unless, one, they're super rich or you're getting into too much trouble. And I was already getting into a lot of trouble. And they're like, you need to do something with their life. And that wasn't like a moment I was proud of. It was more of a moment like, I f***ed up again, you know? So yeah, I got kicked out of school, went back to, I ended up living with my dad because my parents were divorced when I was like 6 years old. Ended up living with my dad, and my dad's like pretty much telling my mom, like, I think he's a strong father figure in his life. You've tried as much as you could up till he was 15, but this guy's crazy rebellious. And so I don't know if like he needs more of the nurturing or if he just needs someone to lay down hard rules, but also be there for him as we slowly change. And that helped out a lot because my dad, kind of gave me like a lot of wiggle room compared to my mom. Like he'd be like, if you don't come home tonight, just give me a call.
Yeah,
I just want to know your life. And so that like breathing space, I think as like a 14, 15 year old, you're like, oh, okay, cool. I can come to be and be my own person while still being responsible and not just like this completely like selfish, let's just do whatever they want. And my dad's like, you're of age, you need to have a car. So we'll buy you a cheap car. You're not gonna get an expensive car. We'll just get, I think it was like a $3,000 Civic. So at least you have wheels and you feel like you're a man. So I did that. And I think that allowed me to kind of like think about how I've lived my first 17, 18 years of life. I'm like, dude, I've messed up a lot. And if I continue down this path, I'm gonna be a loser. Yeah. So I'm not doing good in academics. What can I do? So I ended up joining the military. I became a Marine. And that was like my first building blocks of like understanding discipline, how to like push past what you think your limits are and trying to like set big goals and then kind of reverse engineering little goals to achieve that goal. So after that, I was able to get on a pretty good like academic track, got into UCLA, I graduated, and then that's when YouTube came around, and then kind of like the rest is history where we were able to build from scratch a business that in a space wasn't really established at that time. Like 2007 YouTube, it was still like dancing on piano, you know, or like pranking your grandma, like that kind of stuff.
Very short form stuff.
Yeah.
Really short form. I remember that time period well. I'm curious to know a little bit more about your family. So where are your parents both originally from?
So my dad's from China and my mom's from Taiwan.
Gotcha. And they emigrated here separately or together, or were they?
Yeah. So my dad was part of like the like flee communism. So he left China maybe in the 60s or 70s, went to Hong Kong.
Okay.
And then so everyone's kind of like, I guess path would be they try to get to Hong Kong, which at that time was a UK territory. Then once you get established there, you get your papers there, then it's much easier to apply for citizenship in America.
Gotcha.
So my dad did that route. And I think it was lonely. So he was like in the Chinese newspapers looking for a pen pal.
Okay.
And somehow my mom and my dad through the pen pal like thing got connected. So my mom stayed in Taiwan and she was saying that she never in a million years would think she would move to America.
Yeah.
But through the pen pals, I guess they fell in love. So my mom ended up moving here to be with my dad.
That's so interesting. That's interesting. When you were getting into that type of trouble, were you, what were you... I'm trying to imagine coming from a, you know, immigrant family, what was the, who were you most disappointed to disappoint? Was it the school? Was it the law? Was it your parents?
Yeah. Like internally, huh? Like what was my inner struggle or conflict?
Yeah, exactly.
I think my mom, because, so my parents got divorced when I was pretty young. And so I was 6 years old. And the first time I got kicked out of school was when I was six in first grade. And so I think I had already been like in a single mother home. And so she was 100% the world to me.
Yes.
And to have to like do something and then get a phone call and then see your mother's face, like not only do I have to pull you out of school, none of her friends had to do that for their kids.
What were you doing at six to get kicked out of a school?
I think I was just either like extreme ADD or ADHD. And I was just like a nuisance. I remember like, I think I would just start talking, or in the middle of the teacher's like lecture, I would just walk off. Like, I don't even remember. Yeah, I don't even remember. Like the thing that I remember, like when I snapped back to reality was I remember in fifth grade, we had a pet turtle, like in the class, like a classroom turtle. And I remember one time my teacher was like, Bart. And I remember being snapped back to reality and my hand was in the turtle tank. And I looked back and I was like, wait, everyone is in their seats. And I think that was my first like vivid memory of like, holy, I don't think I'm normal. I think I'm like either teleporting places in my brain or something, you know? Like I would look at kids that sit in the front and they're like taking notes and stuff. And I'm like, how do you do that? Yeah, it wasn't like I'm like this evil, like cutting heads off squirrels, that kind of kid. It was just, I was just very hard to control. And maybe I wasn't fit for like that classroom setting.
Gotcha.
So it was just trying to fit like a circle into a square peg type of thing.
Yeah.
And then I think without my dad being present, my mom is just like, well, control, 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 control. Mm. When I think maybe I did need more breathing room.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you got siblings or was it just you?
No, just me.
Interesting. Yeah. How did you get into YouTube?
That is, it was actually by accident.
Okay.
So one of my closest friends at that time, he did this video where you film like nose down. He's my partner on JK News now. And he drew two eyeballs on his chin. So you kind of like flip it upside down. Like this is the head. And he did this story about like how his dog died and it was like the saddest day of his life or something. And he sent that to me via YouTube. Mm. I watched it and I thought it was like, do you remember like Photo Bucket?
Photo Bucket. Yes, I do actually. Yes, I do.
Yeah, it's like a hosting website.
Yes.
So Photo Bucket is for images. So I thought YouTube was hosting for video. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, oh, that's pretty funny. So I made a video, uploaded it to YouTube, sent it to him, and he thought it was funny. And then all of a sudden I would see the viewership go like 60, 80, 300, 500. Mm. And then both me and him are like, what the fuck is going on? Like, are the people are watching this shit? And then you start seeing comments. And so that was like the summer before we transferred from our community college to a 4-year. And then we're like, maybe we should just team up and do more funny videos because we don't really have anything else to do.
Yeah.
And then that is what started like making content on YouTube.
Because at that time, this is pre-monetization, isn't it?
Yep. 2007. Yeah.
What was the motivation to keep going and growing at that time?
I think we're just bored.
Yeah.
And it was fun. And, also, I think lack of representation in traditional media. Mm. So there wasn't like very many Asian comedians.
Gotcha.
There's Bobby Lee on Mad TV, but at that time that wasn't really running anymore. So we're like, how do we like that's what we really focused on, like more of the cultural humor, our parents, our uncles and that kind of stuff. And so we're like, oh, cool. Like people really like it. They really relate to this. So it was more so like think doing it for the culture. And then our first check didn't even come until maybe 8 months later when we applied for the partnership program. Yep. And it was like $1,000 for 6 months worth of video.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the monetization wasn't like on point at the time. You know?
It was a very different time. It's not like now where kids are like, oh, I want to be a YouTuber, or people have this idea that you can make a lot of money from YouTube or social media in general. That's known now.
Yeah.
But at the time it was just, random.
Yeah, because now videos. People's favorite YouTubers are like, oh my God, he has a Lambo.
Yeah.
I want to be a YouTuber.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I think it's the most desired job amongst under 18s, both in the UK and USA now, is being a YouTuber / influencer.
Yeah. When I talk to like young people, they almost regard being a YouTuber as like a movie star or being in the NBA. And it's like, wow, like they see it as the same class. That's crazy.
Yeah. In fact, I saw something saying that was it under 18s or under 16s, that well-known YouTubers and social media influencers are better recognized by that age group than traditional movie stars.
Wow.
So more 14-year-olds know the big YouTubers, that more of them know who Mr. Beast is than might know who Brad Pitt or George Clooney are.
Yeah, even my kid knows Mr. Beast.
Yeah.
And he's six. We'll go to 7-Eleven. That's Mr. Beast cookie. That's his whatever. I'm like, damn. And he'll be like, oh, you see Prime? Logan Paul owns Prime.
Yeah.
I'm like, what? That's crazy.
Yeah, it's a different world, man. So when you started YouTube, this was post being in the Marines or at the same time?
Simultaneous.
Okay,
so I was in the Marine Reserves. Mm. So you do your, like, all the active training portion, which is about like a year long. And you come back and you're able to do kind of school and the Marines at the same time. And it was during that whole process.
Gotcha. How did you, what was the Marines like?
It was cool. It was like, it was definitely something I needed.
Yeah.
Cause like you first get sent off and you're on the school bus with like 80-100 other people that want to be a Marine. And then it's kind of like, and there's, you know, in a school bus, there's no like music or whatever. So everyone's just kind of sitting there, people from different places, Kansas, whatever, Texas. And then you arrive at, there's this very famous Denny's in San Diego, and they call it like your last supper. That's where everyone eats for the last, your last civilian meal.
Yeah.
You eat there and everyone's talking and it's cool. And then you're happy. You get back on the bus. And then when I arrived, it was got to be like 3 a.m. or something. And then it's just chill and it's just quiet. And you're like, feels like my world's about to be flipped upside down. And then out of nowhere, all these drill instructors come and get the fuck off the bus. And they're like screaming in your face. They're like, get the fuck out right now. And ever since then, it's like 100 mile per hour pace for like 3 months straight.
Wow.
So from you getting sitting in the chair, getting your head shaved, which literally takes 30 seconds because you're just going, so you might get cuts, to you getting even like medical shots. Everyone just rolls up a sleeve, boom, needle goes in. The next day, like your shoulder's all swollen and it hurts and stuff. It's just boom, boom, boom. You're running to eat, running to the bathroom. Like you're always on your feet running. And then you don't really calm down until like nighttime. And then at night, you would like hear like in pitch black in the barracks, you would hear people like crying and stuff because it's like such a culture shock, you know, or you'll hear people's like even having nightmares because you have like 80 people in the barracks and you hear people go like, no, no, no. And they're like crying and stuff. And you're like, real, this is crazy. And then you start to be like really, really grateful for everything you had. And my mom has my letter where in boot camp, I think I wrote like a really... On Sundays, it's a little bit more chill. Yeah. I wrote like, hey, I'm sorry for everything I've ever done, whatever. And I'm like, very grateful that you're my mom. You taught me all these things because you finally have some time to yourself. And you're like, dude, all the free time I had, I didn't realize it was free time and I didn't take advantage of it.
Yeah.
And when you're here, you're like, oh, now I know. Because now you have, every time you want to pee, you got to ask for permission.
Okay.
And they can tell you to get the away from me. You know, they'll be like, request permission to use the restroom. And they'll be like, get the away from me. You're just sitting there like myself, you know?
Yeah.
And then so that was really cool because then coming out of there, it like completely reshaped my mindset of like, okay, what do I need to do? And then you also learn like some Marine Corps history, like some great warriors and generals and stuff. And you're like, okay, cool. Like I have more confidence in myself. I have some discipline. I feel like I have some of the tools that I need that I didn't have before to achieve what I wanted to do.
Gotcha. Did a lot of people drop out?
Oh, yeah. I think we started with like 90, and then my graduating class was like maybe 60.
Mm. Yeah, man. It sounds intense, but it's one of those things where you hear stories about, and maybe people have seen, you know, little parts of it, because it's called BUDS, right? The
Navy SEALs.
Oh,
yeah.
That's SEALs. BUDS, that's SEALs. But
that's like David Goggins.
Yeah, that's even more. Yeah, that's even more hardcore. Yeah, even more hardcore.
Like those guys are sleeping like 2 hours a night. And those guys are, and I think they get woken up, like their alarm clock's a machine gun.
Oh, gosh.
It's like, that stuff's crazy.
Yeah, so yours was intense, but not that level of,
No.
Not that level of insanity.
Yeah.
That's cool. And how long were you in the Marines for?
6 years.
6 years. Okay. And so how did you get into the, I mean, I guess you were already training throughout these years, but I know that when I first came across your stuff on YouTube, it wasn't through the comedy stuff. It was through the fitness stuff.
Oh, cool.
It was through all the barbell brigade work that you were doing. So tell me about getting into the fitness space.
So when we first started doing YouTube, even though me and my friend were just doing like random comedy sketches or comedy rants, the comments would be like, oh, you look jacked. Like, show me your workout program or whatever. And I'm like, dude, I don't know anything about training people. I just like to train.
Yeah.
And after you get enough of those, I feel like the YouTube culture of that time is very organic.
Mm.
So I'm like, oh, maybe I'll start like a fitness channel and I'll just share my workouts, not really teach anybody anything. And so I started a fitness YouTube, and I would just share my workouts and stuff. And then I had this random idea of like, I wonder how strong I am. Like, I feel like I'm pretty strong in my gym, but are there competitions? So I would Google lifting competitions, and this thing called powerlifting popped up, and it was like squat, bench, deadlift. And I was like, dude, I'm such a bro. I only bench and deadlift. I don't squat. So I was like, dude, I better learn how to squat. So I signed up for the competition. Just, you know, I thought it'd be cool, like content. And I fell in love with the sport. So when I was done and I got back to LA, I couldn't really find a powerlifting gym. And that's when my wheels started turning. I was like, okay, what if I create a powerlifting gym, powerlifting apparel, powerlifting brand? And that's kind of like how all of Barbell Brigade became more of like a formalized thing. It went from follow my training to let's start creating like this business and ecosystem that will support a sport that at that time, very few people knew about.
Yeah. Tell me more about that process, because I think sometimes when entrepreneurs are talking, they kind of go from here. I just did this thing. Right.
Yeah,
it's
I just
started a gym.
I had a YouTube
channel, posted some workouts, and then boom, started a gym, opened it up, and it was successful. Obviously, there's a lot of story there. There's going to be a lot of ups and downs. There's going to be a lot of challenges, grinds. Can you talk through that a little bit?
Yeah. So if I were to like zoom in a little bit more, I would say I already had like a quote unquote full time job. I was doing JK Films, JK News. We've been doing JK News for like 10 years now. And so we have a full like production schedule where we, because everyone's art, like more on the artist side of things, our schedule was from like 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. So Mondays we would write ideas, Tuesdays hash them out, Wednesdays have a team meeting, and then we would, you know, schedule locations to produce. Like we really try to run our sketch comedy channel as if it was like Comedy Central, In Living Color, Key and Peele, or whatever. And so that was my work schedule. So to be able to fit Barbell Brigade in, one, JK News, JK Films, that's like a online business. It's different than a gym where it's brick and mortar. You actually have to open, you know, and you have to follow certain city guidelines that you don't really have to as a YouTuber. YouTuber, you could run a studio or you could even shoot out of your bedroom, you know? So we're like, dude, me and my wife, we're like, we don't know, who was my girlfriend at the time, like, we don't know anything about brick and mortars and stuff. So we went to a Barnes & Noble and literally just like looked at business plan books. We're like, we probably need to get a business plan in place because both of us did a major in business. And we found a book that at the back of every chapter, there was a worksheet. So if you understood the chapter, you would fill out the worksheet. And by the end of the book, you would pretty much have your business plan because you could just add, I don't know if it was like 10 or 20 chapters together, and you have like a pretty solid idea of what your business is. And even in the middle, it talks about getting permits, going to the city, and like, you know, walking you through every single step. So me and my wife, we were like, well, if we start work at 11, we'll just meet at 9 or 10 in the morning, and we'll just spend like an hour on it every single day, and we'll keep adding to it. And if there's a big enough obstacle, we'll stop, because we already have our main thing. But if there isn't, then we'll just keep going.
Yeah.
We met for about 6 to 8 months and there was no real obstacle. You know, you got a logo, got it trademarked, went through LegalZoom, just like, you know, like finding like resources to attack like every single step of setting up what your business is, trying to like prevent it from being copied by someone else, like getting registered and all that stuff. And I literally remember, so we opened on October of 2013, and I remember even like 2 or 3 weeks beforehand when we finally got the final stamp by like the fire marshal and like the city planner, like me and my wife were like, oh, it's gonna happen.
Yeah.
This is crazy. And then we hired the people, we conducted interviews, we knew who was gonna work the front desk, the first 4 people we hired. We worked out all the hours they were going to work, the wages, like all the budgeting, like what are the expenses, how much are we charging for membership and all that stuff. And we're like, it almost felt, you know, when something's like too smooth, it feels kind of like scary. I know I'm missing something, you know, but then that really was just it. It was just taking that leap of faith. And then we opened day one and people started coming in. We're like, holy shit, this is crazy. Started signing people up for memberships.
Yeah.
people started working out and we looked down the hallway and our first gym was small. It was like 1,700 square feet. Our current one now is almost 6,000, so it's way bigger. But our first one, I'm like, holy, people are working out in this place that we created. That's insane.
How did you spread the word about it? Was it through your existing online channels or was it more just getting out there and doing the local legwork? How did you promote it?
It was through online. So everything was kind of like organic and leveraging what we already had.
Okay.
So because I already started my fitness YouTube then, I remember making one video and this was like the first big confidence booster. Mm-hmm. I was like, hey guys, I'm about to open a gym that does not exist yet in this area at least. Mm-hmm. So what we want to do is for the first 100 members that sign up, we'll grant you lifetime membership at this price.
Wow. Okay.
When we open, the price is immediately going to jump up. So this is to kind of give thanks to the people that believed in us because we don't know if it's going to be successful or not.
Yeah.
And I think we calculated we only needed 100 members at the time. Mm. And within 2 weeks, all 100 memberships got filled up.
Wow.
And we're like, holy, this is insane. And then here comes the ups and downs that you're talking about. 3 months in, we lose 80% of our membership.
Why?
So people that signed up, they weren't actually fitness enthusiasts. They were more from the JK side of things. Mm. And they just wanted to be in our presence.
Okay.
But if you're not really into lifting, then paying that membership doesn't really make sense. Mm. So I remember three months in going like, holy, we're going to have to close this place down.
Oh gosh.
And this is during the time where both me and my wife, Gio, are still working shifts. We couldn't be hands off yet. So there's times where like I would wake up at 4 a.m., go open the gym at 5, and then I would work there and then still do JK films. Mm-hmm. Come back to the gym to help close at midnight so I don't get home until 1 a.m. And I'm literally just knocked out for like 2 hours and went rinse and repeat for like a week or two like that. And I'm like, dude, this is rough. But what was cool was the 20% that stayed, they were super about powerlifting. And then the word started to spread.
Mm.
And then more and more people started to come. People started posting on their Instagram. I think this is like before a time where people knew like affiliate marketing was a thing.
Okay.
People were just naturally doing it.
Gotcha.
You know, oh, check me out. I'm squatting at Bar Brigade. I'm lifting at Bar Brigade. Mm. And then people were like, what's Bar Brigade? And it just started growing. And then from the 3 months, it skyrocketed actually to like 300 members by the end of 8 months. And then we outgrew that place. So we had to move to the current location.
Man, that's awesome. It's inspiring. And it's interesting to hear the behind the scenes because I remember the sort of what I call the golden era of YouTube fitness. There was a time period, it was about 10 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Where I just feel like YouTube fitness was just growing and peaking. I know there's still a lot of fitness. There's more fitness content out there now than there was at the time, but there was this period where there were, I don't know, sort of maybe a dozen or so prominent people, mostly American, who were just sort of growing their channels and sharing vlogs and sharing workouts and nutrition plans and all that. And I remember that's when I came across Barbell Brigade.
Oh, cool.
So it's kind of curious, interesting, because I was in the UK, so I'm in a whole different country, right? I'm over the ocean.
Yeah.
And I one day come across, oh, okay, like this Bart Kwan guy. I remember, gosh, you know, this is when you had Physiques of Greatness, you know, Chris Jones, Omar Esau.
Yeah, the OGs.
You know, CT Fletcher.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, like Christian Guzman, Matt Ogus.
Do you remember a guy named Scooby? He would wear a fisherman's
Scooby
hat.
Scooby with the hat. This is when you had was it Mike Chan who had all the six-pack shortcuts, ads all the time.
Yeah.
You know, every fitness video you click on, he's there with his shirt off teaching how to do towel rolls or whatever. And then you had, like Jeff Cavalier with Athlete X. And there was just this period where it was just like super exciting.
Yeah.
And there was just so much stuff happening. So I think that's when I first came across your stuff,
cool.
Actually.
Yeah,
so
that period is so cool because I remember like, you know, when you think of commercial gyms back then, it was really a majority of people just going through the motions. It was just people just going there doing machines or whatever. Yeah. So if you really got after it in the gym, you kind of felt like an outcast.
Mm.
You know, it'd be like this one person that comes in with maybe chains on his neck or some guy eating like chicken in the corner, you know, and it just felt like outcasted. And then you would go online and you would watch people like Matt Ogus was the first person to teach me about macros.
Okay.
And he would have like his whole day's worth of meals planned. And then you're like, oh, wow, like people are living and breathing. And then Scooby was the one that taught me that you could do dips between two chairs, you know? And I always just remember going like, oh, okay, cool. Like you felt like there's like this safe haven, some place you could relate to. Like you're not weird. Like I like training hard. And it's technically not a sport because like even my friends would be like, what are you trying to do? Like there's no lifting in the Olympics. You know, like why are you training so hard?
Well, there is, but.
yeah, true. Yeah. But what are you going to do? Like try like, you know, and I was like, I don't know. I just like this though. Like I like going this hard. And then it made it normal to, it's okay to go hard even if there's no like end trajectory.
Yeah. It's interesting what's happened in the world of fitness because more people than ever are into fitness and strength training in particular.
Yeah.
I've been lifting for over 20 years. I remember I started training when I was 15, maybe even 14.
Yeah.
And lifting weights at the time was sort of, you know, like a bit, even at that time, it was kind of considered like a meathead activity, right? You want to be a bodybuilder or maybe certain sports. I was playing rugby at the time, but, women in particular were not into lifting,
sure, yeah.
Right? It was kind of, the girls did cardio,
yeah.
And then you go into any place with weights and it's 95% just guys. And over the last two decades, there's been this interesting shift where men and women of all ages and demographics, you go to any gym now, anywhere in the world, and it's men and women, and the women are lifting.
They're lifting.
They're no longer afraid of getting too bulky or, you know, getting whatever it is. People have worked out that toning isn't really a thing.
Yeah.
Like a lot of those myths have kind of died, and it's interesting. And then you've kind of had this weird overcorrection into the, where you've got this sort of the dark side of the social media, where you have people who are just there like thirst trapping and in the gym half naked,
yeah.
Putting cameras in weird places and trying to sort of entrap men and whatever. Yeah. And you're just like, oh gosh, maybe we need to go back to like some segregated gyms or something. So what are your thoughts on how gym culture and strength training culture has changed since you started to where things are now?
It's interesting because I remember being the weird guy, even like with my friends, you know, they'll be like, what? You went to the gym yesterday. You're going to go today? I'm like, dude, like if I had the time, I think I would go 14 times a week. I'd go in the morning and night. Like I just like it, you know? And then they're like, dude, this guy's weird. And like, what are you going to do? Like be Mr. Olympia or something? I'm like, I don't know. I just like lifting. It's just fun. And so it went from being me being the weird guy to, I think, the YouTube part where there's a lot of, I guess, quote unquote, weird people. Mm-hmm. And we kind of became like this collective mindset. And then I think that was what was really needed because then you start having like all these research studies and data that comes out where all the myths that people thought like, oh, don't lift when you're too young. It's going to stunt your growth, or chicks are going to get too bulky. Yeah. They're going to look like men. And then you just see all this crazy data that shows the otherwise, mm-hmm. And then you see like, oh wait, if you're 80 years old and you lift, it actually battles osteoporosis, you know, and you start seeing all these other like good parts of it. So I really like that movement. But the whole like skimpy gym outfits, I'm like, I don't know. I mean, it might be built into our DNA because like sex is one of the primal driving forces. So I feel like, I mean, even if you go to a car show, you're like, what does this chick in a bikini have to do with this with this Land Cruiser, you know, or this Toyota Camry? But there is. There's going to be some hot chicks at the car show, you know, and I'm like, maybe it's just part of it. But I think the intentional entrapment part.
That's weird. That's very weird.
That's just a very weird avenue to try to get famous because I'm like, what do you want to be known as? Like the entrapment girl?
It's really odd. Yeah. It's really odd. Where do you think it's going? I mean, I think in the West, we're in such an interesting place when it comes to health.
Yeah.
I think we're in a really concerning place. And I think it's weird how there's this bifurcation. It's like more people are training than ever.
Mm-hmm.
I'd imagine gym memberships are probably at an all-time high.
And people are fatter than ever.
But obesity is at an all-time high. It's now hit 40% in this country, which is insane. That's obesity. That's not being overweight. Obesity rate is, I think, 39% now amongst American adults.
And
that is deeply concerning for the first time ever in this country's history. And most people don't know this. The life expectancy is dropping now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's dropped. Damn. Yeah, it's dropped from 78 to 76. Wow. And that's the first time that's ever happened outside of like wartime.
Yeah.
That's insane. It's always just been going up as medicine improves and so on. And yeah, over the past two years consecutively, the life expectancy has decreased and most people don't even know that. So I look at that and I'm like, that is concerning. Obesity rates are also going up in the UK and Canada and even in the developing world, even outside of the modern West.
Yeah.
It's obesity is just on the rise. Heart disease is on the rise. Diabetes is on the rise. So there's this strange juxtaposition where people are more health aware and more health conscious than ever. Gym memberships at an all-time high. More people are training. There's much more awareness of this, much more awareness and talk about nutrition. Gosh, how many podcasts and books and this and that. But people still, on average, are getting fatter and fatter and less healthy. So I don't know exactly what that means for the future, but I find it quite concerning. I often think about the fact we're in the first quarter of a new century, and I sort of think, okay, we can look back and see how the 1900s went. If you look at the world from 1900 to 2000, and then I'm thinking, okay, from 2000 to 2100, what's our society, culture, health, just our state of humanity, what's that going to look like over the next 50 to 75 years? Because if we keep going at the current rate, then you're going to end up at a time in 2100 where like 10% of the population's not fat.
Yeah. I feel like if we extrapolate what's going on right now, because the polarization's so strong, the world is going to be like, it's going to miss the entire like fitness middle class.
Yes.
And you'll have Spartans and just really heavy people.
Yeah.
There'll be like people that are like 400 pounds and then like under 10% body fat.
Yeah. It's like, have you seen WALL-E?
No, everyone tells me I should watch it.
Okay. Decent movie, but it's set in the future.
Yeah.
And is it even on this planet? It's somewhere, but all the humans are obese.
Oh, wow.
And everyone's just in these like sort of flying, they're like mobility scooters, but they hover.
Yeah.
And you just like sort of eat through a tube and you've just got like screens. You just have screens in front of you. You don't need to move, right? You just sit in this chair.
Yeah.
And everyone's just blubbery and they're just sort of floating around. And I watch it and I'm like, that could happen. I'm kind of like, this is not so far off.
We're halfway there. Yeah. Like if I go to a Target or Walmart, I'll see heavier set people walk from their car, right?
Yeah.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
So their legs work. They get there, and then you know how you can rent like those scooters? They immediately get on the scooters so they can make their shopping experience much easier. And then they check out, get their bags, park it, and still walk to their car. And so I'm like, they don't need this, but we are heading towards this direction of like more and more convenience. Mm-hmm. And I feel like my own personal perspective on it is the world is designed to get more and more convenient because we're innovative.
Yeah.
But the more convenient we get, we need to practice even more self-control. Mm-hmm. And that's the tough part, because if you have like fast food at every corner, now you have to be able to say no at every corner, you know? And same thing with even like, and it's not just with fitness, but just everything. Like, let's say you have porn at your fingertips everywhere. Mm. How do you control that at every corner? Or like when we get stuck in doom scrolling, like how do we unplug from there and go, oh, maybe I should like balance this out with some sort of book that's gonna increase my intellect. Mm. So I just feel like as we head towards that direction where we're slurping stuff out, we need to counterbalance ourselves, but it's such a high like dopamine hit on this side, and hard work is not fun, at least in the immediate. Mm-hmm. It pays off after. It's tough. Like, how do we get the world to kind of, I guess, turn up the self-control and like discipline knob as we turn up the convenience knob, you know?
It's like at every corner, there's an attempt to hijack your dopamine and get you to consume, whether with your eyes or your ears or your mouth, consume something that is not good for you.
Yeah.
And our ancestors didn't really have to battle this, right? Just battling the elements and staying alive was enough to stay in shape.
Yeah.
And there wasn't just, the problem was absence. I often say now, at least in the developed world, we're facing problems of excess more than problems of lack. I mean, how many people a year in this country die of starvation? Probably five.
Yeah.
How many die of obesity related stuff?
The biggest example.
Overconsumption.
Yeah. The biggest example is when you go to like a big city like LA or even Vegas even, and you see the homeless population and they're overweight.
And they're overweight.
Yeah. You're like, if the people that lack food, shelter, resources have a lot of excess calories.
Yep.
Like we do not have like a food problem. You know?
I once met someone, a young man in Nigeria who wanted to move to the US and I asked him why. And he said, this quote always sticks in my brain because he said it so casually. And I actually think it's deeply profound. And he said, because in America, even the poor people are fat.
Yeah.
And I was like, I was like, that's a bar right there. I don't think you know that how deep that was, but that's actually a lot to consider.
Yeah.
There. It's strange in this country how there is a link between poverty and obesity, which makes sense and simultaneously doesn't.
Yeah.
It makes sense in a way, but you're also thinking, man, we've advanced so much in terms of technology and agriculture and whatever it is that they're doing with the food, where you can create huge amounts of calories, cheap, tasty calories at a low price. And it's now considered, you'll hear all the time, you know, how expensive it is to eat healthy and nutritious food, which is not really how it's supposed to be. It's a strange inversion. It's kind of like an oxymoron.
Yeah.
And a question I had for you, and this is just something we can discuss in general, because this has been on my mind. And as someone who cares about health, fitness, people's well-being, mentally, physically, and so on, I think we both know how to help individuals. Right? If a guy comes up to you and is like, Bart, I want to get stronger. Bart, I want to lose weight. I want to burn some fat. I need to lose 50. We know exactly how to do that. You know what to prescribe. You can coach, you can give the info for them to do that. I've been wondering for a long time, how do you scale that? Is it possible?
What
is
I it think possible? We need to scale that. I don't think it's going to be popular opinion,
okay,
but I think we need a dictator.
okay, let's go.
So I feel like when you have like a mass problem, and when people have lost sense of their own self-control, then you need to be controlled by others in a temporary way. And this is all hypothetical, theoretical, obviously, because we all fall victim to human error. And then the person that's supposed to be temporarily a dictator gets power hungry. And, you know, we've seen what happens in history. Mm-hmm. But in my opinion, it's like kind of even going back to you steal something, cut off your hands. Mm-hmm. Type of thing where we need like a mass rule, or like something that's like every kid from first grade to seniors in high school, everyone starts their day by walking or running a mile, like something like that, you know, or get rid of all junk food in the cafeteria. Everyone's eating chicken, rice, and broccoli or something like that, but like something drastic until. Because to me, it's kind of like the wax on, wax off in Karate Kid. You know, like Daniel, he hates painting until Mr. Miyagi goes, check this out. And he strikes him. He's like, oh, shoot. Oh, like, you know, you kind of have to go through this reluctant struggle before you kind of understand what the ROI is on what you just did.
Yeah.
You know, like even with my kid, I always tell him, I'm like, if you don't control yourself, other people will. Like that's what the police are for or whatever. And then also there's things that I'm like, I always go like, if you don't like doing it, we'll take turns. If you don't like doing this time, if you follow Papa, and the next time, if the same thing occurs, we'll listen to what you have to say.
Yes.
He'll listen to what I have to say because we take turns. But 100% of the time after he does it, he feels better about what he just did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like whether it's jujitsu practice, basketball practice, or even swimming for the first time, he's freaking out. He's like, oh my God, I can't hold on to the wall. I'm like, trust me, this is going to be something you're going to like. Mm-hmm. And once you learn the ROI of that thing, it's going to be rewarding. But yeah. Of course, as a kid, you're like, what do you mean? Like, I'm getting like choked out right now. What's going to make me like this? Yeah. And then after an hour, I'm like, do you want to come back again?
Yeah.
He's like, oh yeah, I do actually.
Mm.
And I'm like, okay, cool. So if this is how we talk to children, then people that don't have self-control, they could be mature in age, but they're like something with their, I don't know, like their amygdala or like, you know, their brain process. It still hasn't been developed to be an adult.
Mm-hmm.
And then so sometimes you just need the dictator.
Like a strong arm. Yeah, it's a hard one because you know, obviously freedom and liberty are ultra important,
yes.
Right? So we're talking hypothetically.
Yeah.
But it's just like, how do you create an incentive structure so that people opt for the delayed gratification option more often than the instant, immediate, you know, whether it's your taste buds or it's your eyes or it's some fleeting emotion of just, oh, well, this makes me feel good. You know, if someone puts a tub of candy here, like it feels good in the moment to eat a bunch of candy, but it's like, it's not good in the long term. And I think the one thing with human beings is, I mean, and it makes sense. I get why we're like this is in most things, people will opt for the path of least resistance.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's, okay, you can take this path and it's easy, or you can take this path and it's difficult, the natural inclination day after day, hour after hour is to take the easier option. And maybe some of that is hardwired in us because the harder option burns more calories.
Yeah.
And calories used to be quite rare and precious.
Yeah.
And so it's like, okay, it made sense to be lazy in the past.
Yeah.
Like if you had an opportunity to be lazy.
Yeah.
That was kind of probably a bit of a luxury. So it's like, okay, cool. Like, let's just feast and gorge and rest and sleep. And now we're living in this time where we have overabundance and calories are plentiful.
Yeah, everywhere.
But people are still hardwired to pretend as if a famine is coming. Okay, like, let's get it while the getting is good. But the getting's always good now.
Yeah.
And so instead, people just grow to 200, 300, 400, 500, 600 pounds.
What I do like is, I read this about the Japanese corporate structure. So for them, their companies they have, I think, like a waist size limit.
Yeah.
So they're like, if you want us to pay for your health insurance, you got to be within, I don't know what their waist was, but it seemed reasonable. Mm. I think it was like under 40 or 38 or something like that. Like if, because you got to show me you care about your health for me to pay for your health insurance. Yes. And I'm like, that's pretty cool. I kind of like some sort of 50-50 incentive. Because then I think in America, the problem that we have is I'm going to fuck myself up.
Yes.
And now medical, you take care of me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going to get diabetic. I'm going to fuck my mental health up. And then now you guys take care of me somehow. And you're just completely giving your responsibility to someone else.
Yeah.
And then now other people's tax dollars are paying for a problem you caused, you know? Versus if there's some sort of like we're in this together. You put in $50, I put in $50. Mm-hmm. I feel like, I don't know, but that could also, I have no idea.
it's interesting because I don't know if there's, I think it's such a new problem. I'm not aware if there's any country that has reversed it.
Oh, I mean, right.
It's a new human problem. I can't imagine at any time or place in history there was a situation where the population was just becoming obese and becoming diabetic and whatever.
Yeah.
And then they did these policies and they managed to get people generally back to good health.
Yeah.
It's a totally new problem.
It's new.
It's like, okay, we've never been here before.
We've never had too many resources.
No. We're newly in the stage and it's just going to accelerate as technology continues to accelerate. Things are going to become more convenient and easier
and
more
last longer.
And so it's not like, oh, we're going to suddenly, unless there's some alien invasion or something that plunges us back into the Stone Age.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, we have to rein this in a little bit because the trajectory we are on is not good. It's weird. We live in this strange time where I feel like humanity is simultaneously progressing and regressing.
Yeah.
We're improving in some technology is obviously improving.
Yeah.
some aspects of society and culture, you know, racism has declined, sexism has declined, you know, wars have declined, the amount of people who are dying in childhood, you know, babies dying, mothers being dying, giving birth, all those things are declining, right?
Yeah.
All those, but then simultaneously, our attention spans are declining. Our waistlines are increasing. More people are getting diabetic. Mental health is decreasing. Suicide rates and overdose rates are increasing. And even minor things like our ability to remember stuff. Like, we're all affected by this. I mean, when we were kids, you could probably just like memorize a whole bunch of phone numbers and addresses and whatever, and you just had them in your head.
I remember all the street names, everything. Yep.
And then once you've got a smartphone, you forget, you now know like three numbers and you've forgotten how to remember them all. And I'm like, that's concerning. I had a better memory in this capacity when I was 10.
Yeah, all that stuff is outsourced now.
Yeah. And that's weird. It's cool that we have the tech.
Yeah.
But it's concerning that without the tech, if that were to disappear again, I'm like, man, have we just nerfed ourselves in terms of our ability?
Yeah. I remember a time where, like, even like in elementary school, like, hey, the sun, you know, rises from the east and you can kind of tell general directions. Mm-hmm. I feel like in this day and age, like, if you even talk to people in north, south, west or whatever, they're like, I don't know what that is. You know, like, it's on the north side of town. Like, I don't know what that is.
Let me Google that.
Yeah. Or pull up the phone compass. Yeah.
Start swiveling the hand around.
Yeah. It's definitely crazy because, like you said, like, even with racism, it's statistically dropping. Mm-hmm. And you have people of all kinds of backgrounds getting into the highest places in both government and success and entrepreneurship. But in our faces, it seems like racism is at an all-time high. You know, like news and
because there's so much information. So you see and hear everything now.
Yeah.
So there's this weird illusion that's created by the internet where things that are incredibly rare can be made to look incredibly common.
Yeah.
Just like viewpoints that are incredibly rare can be made to look extremely popular.
Yeah.
So if you're someone who spends a lot of time online, there's this disparity between what you observe in the real world versus what you observe online.
Yeah.
Like I've said before, if I wasn't someone who, if I didn't travel a lot, if I were someone who just lived in the UK and I stayed in the UK and I'd never been to America, for example, and all my info about the USA was from what I see on social media, I would be like, I'm not stepping foot in that country. Right? Because what's making the news? What's going viral? Oh my gosh, this person's being murdered. This looting is going on here. Oh my gosh, this police officer just killed this guy over here. Look at these people fighting. Look at all their crazy political stuff. Oh my gosh, they're transing the kids and they're doing like all this, like there's just all this gnarly stuff coming out every day. Yeah, school shootings, like gosh, like this place is dangerous. And I know British people who will not travel to the USA for these reasons.
Yeah.
Because their view of this country is just the extreme news stories and things that are, and they're like, and you see so much of it. And then you actually come and you're like, oh, where's the race war? Where's the white supremacy I heard about? Where are the, you know, wait, I thought the evil cops were just driving around picking off black people. I thought like I thought everyone was hating everyone. I thought that, and you're just, whatever city you're in, you're like, 99.9% of people are just getting on with their lives. They're getting on fine. They're not having shootouts in the street or whatever it is. And yeah, I think this happens across all these different areas where, it can sort of mess up people's views and perceptions. And it runs in different directions. Simultaneously, I've met Americans who are afraid to go to the UK because they think they're going to get stabbed or they're going to be the victim of a terrorist attack or they're going to... And I'm like, dude, like you can go to London. Like it's not, you're not getting the probability of you like just walking down the street in London and some crazy how happens. It's really low. Like you can go, you can check out the nice pretty buildings. You can learn about the history. You can meet people. People are going to treat you nicely. Don't worry, regardless of your background. And it cuts in all ways. I spent a lot of time in the Middle East. Spent a lot of time particularly in Dubai now, but you know, growing up in Saudi Arabia, living in and you talk to people in the West and they're like, oh my gosh, like, what if you go there? Like, is it safe for a woman to go? Whatever. And you're just like, man, like get off the internet and hop on a plane, check out some places and you'll
it's even like that just in America. Mm. Like Because it makes other places' problem like your problem. You know, like with like one of my friends, he's a police officer in East LA, and East LA is where my wife's from, and it's like 98 or 99% Hispanic. Mm-hmm. There's like zero white people, zero black people, zero Asians. It's literally like 98, 99% Hispanic. And during the whole like defund the police movement, where the police were viewed as like these
ACAB.
Yeah, exactly. Like they're out. They're just all innately racist and all that. Happening in other parts of the country, it reflects back, and now they have their own distrust in the police. Mm. And then the police that have spent the last 10 years like building relations with the community, they're like, we are not even like that color. We're not part of that racial tension or mm-hmm. anything. I'm Hispanic. You're Hispanic. We've built like our rapport over the last 10 years and all of that was gone. Everyone hates the cops. Just right there.
Do you want to know how crazy it got? The same thing happened overseas.
Really?
It's the same in the UK.
Wow.
UK and police don't even have guns.
Oh my God.
People are walking around with signs, you know, hands up, don't shoot. I was like, guys, what?
That's crazy. Like,
it was the craziest.
That's crazy. That's
the internet.
Wow.
Right? Like after the wake of the
George, like, what do you mean no shit? I've never shot. I can't shoot if I wanted to.
Yeah, it was wild. It was like this thing happens in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
Minnesota.
Yeah.
And then 3 days crazy. Later in London, in Berlin, in Sydney, Australia, you've got people out on the street. And they had the ACAB graffiti, everything.
Oh my goodness, yeah.
And I was like, how? Like, this doesn't even make sense in this country's context.
Yeah.
The British police, on average per year, I think shoot like 2 or 3 unarmed civilians in total. And it's typically because like there's some years it's zero.
Yeah.
Like the police don't have, the average police officer does not have a gun.
They just have like a little baton or something.
Yeah, they've got a baton and maybe a taser.
Like a whistle.
Yeah. Because the US is different because the US is an armed population.
Yes.
Has more guns than people.
Yeah.
UK is totally different. So yes, there is crime and there are problems and there are special firearm units within the police. So it's not like the entire police force in the UK doesn't have any guns, but the standard police officers who are just driving around or who are walking around on the beat, they don't have guns and neither do citizens. So that whole narrative doesn't even, it's not true in the US in the way that it's framed, but it's even goofier to take it and try to stick it on a country like the UK or Australia, where you're like, what do you mean hands up, don't shoot? it's weird, but that's the internet.
Yeah, that's the problem with the internet, where I think people lose context. They see something and they don't have time to themselves to think about what is actually happening or how to categorize information, and then people just go nuts, man.
Yeah. How do you stay sane with that all?
With all this?
Mm, yeah. Especially being in this world for such a long time.
I think I try to zoom in as much as I can to like the micro level. Mm. Like, so what is important to me? Me, my son, my wife. Mm-hmm. You know, so like, is my family, am I good, first of all? Am I healthy? Can I be a good father? Can I be a good husband? Am I working hard towards my own personal goals? If I'm a healthy organism, then comes the next bigger unit, which is my family, my immediate family. Then the next slightly bigger unit, my extended family. And then is my street good? Mm-hmm. Like, it takes a few steps before I even really like even make politics really a part of the equation. Because mm-hmm. first of all, like before, if people are like out there screaming about whatever side they're on and you don't even know your neighbor's name, mm-hmm. I'm like, dude, you need to, it starts with, you know, yourself. And then how are you building the community around? Because if your neighbor doesn't know you enough to even take out the trash or put it away for you and you guys can lean on each other, like that's where community is first. Mm-hmm. You know, like the more communal policies, the nonverbal policies before you get to like crazy legit like legislation. So I think when my unit is good and the school my kid goes to is good, he's living a healthy practice, and we have a really good family dynamic and environment, and I can kind of see 3-5 years down the line that we're scaling towards success. Mm-hmm. That's what grounds me. Like, that's my anchor.
Okay, that.
Everything else, that's noise. And I've gotten myself to a point where I feel like I'm pretty financially comfortable, mm-hmm. where I can make drastic decisions anytime I want. I can move from this city anytime I want. Mm-hmm. Just kind of like how I moved out of California yeah. 3 years ago. And I'm willing to move anywhere in the world that I need to keep the peace of mind that my mm-hmm. family has. And that's like the most important thing to me. So everything else I almost view as if it's a movie that's happening. Mm. And as much as I can, I'll try to contribute to this movie. But when I like put my phone down or if I turn off the internet, it's me walking out of the movie theater. It has yeah. no effect on how my son views me, how I view my son and my family.
Yeah, that's yeah. powerful, man. So being more concerned about your house than the White House.
Exactly.
Yeah. And a lot of people get that the wrong way around.
Yeah, because people, what's the phrase that I've seen online? Like people overestimate external factors and underestimate internal factors.
Yeah, well, I think, I'm no psychologist, but I think the reason why a lot of people do that is, well, number one, I think people are kind of constantly distracted.
Yeah.
But I think it's also a way of outsourcing responsibility. Mm-hmm. I think that, I know a lot of people who are heavily involved in the political world, and I know a lot of hyper-political people in various ways. And I think politics is interesting, and obviously it affects people, and it's a part of humanity, so people should have awareness and some knowledge
yeah.
about it and participation where it makes sense. But I think that when some people get hyper-obsessed with the political battles and what's just happening day, the soap opera of politics, I think a lot of it is a way of outsourcing responsibility, because then you don't need to, whatever's going wrong, you can blame politics. You can blame whether it's the president or it's the governor or it's the mayor or it's the Democrats or it's the Republicans, it's the left, it's the right or whatever.
Yeah.
The reason for the problems, the reason why you're not happy, the reason why you're not successful, even the reason why you're not healthy. Like I have this health conversation with some people and all the talk is just about the governments and the food companies and this and that. And I absolutely agree with many of the points made. I'm like, yeah, like they are putting garbage in your foods. Yeah. The way the advertising is, the way Big Pharma is, the way I agree with all that. And my view is, okay, given all that, you, whoever I'm talking to, should be even more. You should be taking even more personal responsibility and accountability, because the deck is stacked against you.
Yeah.
So if you do truly believe that all these elements are working against you to keep you unhealthy, I'm like, okay, cool. So are you just going to succumb to it and be a victim of it? Or are you going to be like, okay, this is all going on and it sucks and I don't really like all these different aspects, but I'm going to control the person I can control.
Yep.
And I mean, I only eat for myself. I don't feed anybody else. Like, yeah. I only drink for myself. I'm not telling other people how much water to drink or whatever, right? I can't go to the gym for someone else. Yeah. I can only train for me. You can only train for you.
Yeah.
We can encourage people. We can inspire people. You can put out info. You can put out videos, books, podcasts, whatever it is. But ultimately, each person has to do the work. And I think that a lot of people avoid that and turn their target towards all the things they cannot control.
Yeah.
And they spend more time and energy doing that. Someone will spend 4 hours screaming about politics every single day on social media. But then they'll tell you they don't have 1 hour to exercise.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's fascinating. It's fascinating how many people don't have an hour to exercise, yet the average person spends over 5 hours a day looking at screens.
Wow. Yeah.
Not for work either.
Yeah.
This is TV plus social media. Yeah. Is taking up 5+ hours a day, but 1 hour to go for a jog, do some push-ups, lift some weights. That's far-fetched.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
The way that I always viewed it is like, okay, yeah, like everything that's happening, but what's your move?
Mm.
You know, right? It's like, okay, it's raining outside. Then where's your umbrella? Where's your raincoat? Like, what's your move? What are you going to do? You still got to go outside. And I think, like you said, where a lot of people are just outsourcing that responsibility, it's easier to say, I can't mow the lawn because it's raining or whatever, you know? And it's sad because the minute it builds momentum in that way. Like, you know, when you start losing control, you're like, well, I can't do that because of this. then the next thing is because of this. And eventually you're going to get to a point where you feel like you have zero control. Mm. And I also feel like that's probably one of the reasons why like depression rates are so high, because yep. people have passed off all the things that they do have control of. So now their reality really is, I have zero control of my life.
Yeah.
Versus if you can start gaining control, like, oh yeah, I do have control of my body, my mind, the things that I consume, how I spend my time. People that are in places that have, that are the authority in like all the buckets of their life, you rarely find them depressed.
Yes.
Because they're like, I control this plane. I have all of the levers. I know what to pull. I mean, my hands are on the steering wheel. And yeah, it's a tough situation to be in. And even with my kid, like I don't ever let him use the phrase, because I'll be like, oh, like, how come that happened? Teacher didn't let me. Mm. Or I go, oh, how come like how come he didn't try that new move the jiu-jitsu coach taught you? Like, oh, the kid didn't let me.
Yeah.
I'm like, you can never use the word not let you. Mm. You can say what I did didn't work. I'm going to try something else. Because I want to make sure he's in the driver's seat.
Because
I can see how easy it is where you're just like, you drive.
Yeah.
Then you're like, well, we're lost because of this guy, versus you should have kept your hands on the steering wheel the whole time. You know,
absolutely, man. Yeah. You've talked about your wife and your son a little bit. So obviously family is very important to you, as it should be. How has marriage and or fatherhood changed you? So from being the reckless young man that you were for some time, to, you know, getting married, becoming a father, being someone who is now responsible for others and teaching others in the home and, of course, online as well. How's that shaped you?
I think, at least for me, it kind of like widened my view of the world, and it made what I thought was important less important.
Mm.
So before, I had like very specific goals that I thought were my passions. Like I'd have to pursue my passion. I want to enter into a film festival one day. Like I had all these like things laid out. Even up until the day that my son was born, I was like, oh yeah, for sure. I want to do this and that. And then the minute my son was born and I held him in my hand, and you're just like, holy, I'm in charge of this guy.
Mm.
This is insane. And there's no manual, you know, there's no like father's manual, mother's manual. You're just like, oh, and then you're just at the hospital, and then the hospital discharges you. You're like, okay, see you guys.
Yeah, good luck.
And they're like, oh, what do? I just put him in the car seat. Okay. You know, and we're like in the car and I'm just driving home and you're just thinking about.
Keep him alive.
Yeah. You're like, holy. And then there's like this funny like thing about how people love their pets like they're their kids until they have one. And I'm like, what do you mean? And the minute I bring my kid home and I see my dog, I'm like, get away, you flea bags. Like, no licking his face, no sleeping on the bed anymore.
Yeah.
And it's like now everything is, how do I create? And now it's like a double-edged sword.
Mm.
How do I create a world where this kid feels safe, does not experience the pains that I felt, but also doesn't turn into an entitled. You know? So that's like the double-edged sword, because like, you know, everyone that like I listen to Patrick Bet David a lot, and he always he talks about how like that's the toughest thing. Like every parent's goal is to give your kids everything they never had.
Yeah.
But then by doing so, they're not going to be the same person you are and learn the same, you know, lessons and discipline and stuff like that. So now you have to create these manufactured struggles. So that's like the biggest part where I'm like, okay, how do I give him everything I didn't have, but also make sure he lives a life that through his own actions, he sees that the more work he puts out, it's rewarding to him and it incentivizes him to work hard and to also develop and learn those lessons that I learned. And that is now like priority one. I'm like, I don't care about any of my other passions. I don't give a about filmmaking. If I need to bag groceries to make ends meet, I'll do that. I have no pride. You know, when it comes to my son and my family, I have zero pride on anything. I'll do whatever it takes to make it work. And that was something I never would have thought, you know?
Yeah. No, that's fascinating, man. As we said before, we live in an interesting time. There's so many thoughts I have of the moment we're living in and the world from now onward, which are firsts in humanity. And I think a lot of people don't think about it. So for example, we are living in the first time where your son is going to, and your son's children, all of your descendants from now on, all of the stuff that you make and create, they will be able to see.
Yeah.
So we don't have video, let alone audio, let alone photos of our great, great, great grandfathers. Right. I don't know who he was. I don't know what he looked like. Never heard his voice. Certainly never seen him on camera.
Yeah.
But my future children, your children, our descendants, all every podcast you've done, every video,
that's crazy,
every
yeah.
photo, right? Like they can be like, oh, this is my great, great, in the year 2500.
Yeah.
They can be like, oh yeah, this guy's my great, 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 great grandfather. And they can just see you in 3D, get to know you, all of your jokes, hundreds, thousands of hours
yeah.
of stuff. And so from now onwards, this is the world we're living in. It's all documented.
Yeah.
It's all out there. And I just don't think most people even think of that. It's just like, man, that's a first in human history. And that genie's not going back in the bottle. I also think with a lot of kids now, like a lot of kids are on the internet, their entire growth is somewhat public. So many,
oh, yeah.
many babies are online before they're even born because people post the scans.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah,
so
yeah,
people,
yeah,
oh,
yeah,
I had
yeah.
my 20 week scan. Here's my baby. Oh, boom, the baby is born. Here he is at 1, 2, 3. So there's no pictures of me on the internet from being in my mother's womb or being born or being read. And then for many kids in this generation, that's the case. Like it's all documented.
Yeah.
And I just think that's crazy.
Yeah. A phenomenon I experienced was, being online, like a lot of people know you.
Yeah.
So starting from a very young age, my kid has witnessed people taking pictures with me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so part of his like norm
yeah.
that he can see that like look in someone's eyes and he'll be like, hey, Papa, I think he wants to take a picture with you. And that's normal.
Yeah.
And then when they do come and take a picture, my kid hugs me and smiles too. Like it's just all part of like this normal thing that people like taking pictures with his family.
Yeah.
And he's not even at the like cusp of understanding what fame or like celebrity is or anything like that. It's just normal to him that random people want to take pictures.
I wonder if he thinks that happens to every dad.
I know.
Like it's just a thing people do. Yeah, just go up to strangers and just take photos.
Yeah. I'm like, this is crazy. I'm like, I never thought of it like that.
Yeah. What are you most excited about for the future?
For the future? This is like some, I think like old senior citizen mindset. But I feel like I was fortunate enough to get into a field that was very rewarding and got me a taste of entrepreneurship,
mm-hmm.
which I never thought I would like business or anything like that. And because we don't really have any entrepreneurs or business people in our family. Everyone is more like a trades type person. So even like my uncle, who's the most successful person on my side of the family, he's a dentist, mm-hmm. which is technically still a trade, like a skill, you know? But I've been able to set myself up pretty well financially, where now my next phase of life, I would like to leverage all those things into investments so that I can be retired. And when I say retired, I more so mean like work on things that I want to and not have to pay the bills. And then that way I completely choose my own schedule of like, let's say I want to take my kid out to go see a national park for 2 weeks, you know, I could do anything I want. And it kind of goes back into in line with like that whole like control aspect that we were talking about, where I feel like I'm in control of a lot of things in my life, but not 100% control of my time because mm-hmm. I still have to quote unquote work.
Yes.
But when I don't have to, then work is an option if I really enjoy the project, but I don't have to do anything anymore.
Yeah.
And then now I can really prioritize the things I really, really care about, you know? So that's like the next goal I'm trying to tackle in like the next 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's awesome, man. Dude, Bart, you're an inspiring guy, man. I love to hear your story. Look forward to chatting to you more in the future. And thanks for coming on the show, man. Where can people find and follow you online? What's the best place?
So my own personal stuff, that'll be Bart Kwan, B-A-R-T-K-W-A-N. That's just my Instagram for all the comedy-based stuff. Just Kidding News on YouTube. And then all of our fitness-based stuff is barbellbrigade.com.
Awesome. Bart Kwan, thanks for coming on Real Talk with Zuby.
Thank you.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.